global stock markets are going up so far today, and that's news in itself. From Marketplace, I'm David Brancaccio. The composite stock index in Shanghai rose more than 5% today. The 100-share index in London is up 2.25%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up more than a percent, although it's 2.5 hours before the opening bell still. The influential head of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York says an interest rate hike in September has become, quote, less compelling than it was a few weeks ago. That's certainly a heavy hint for seesawing financial markets that the guardians of interest rates might delay engineering a rise in rates. It would be the first time since 2006 if and when that happens. We'll learn more about what other central bankers are thinking this weekend as they cluster in Wyoming's Grand Tetons, Marketplace's Nova Safo reports.
Banking leaders gather in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, starting tonight for an annual get-together hosted by the Federal Reserve. Janet Yellen and a few of the members of the Fed's Open Market Committee won't be there, but others will, including central bankers from around the world.
There's still enough intellectual firepower there to make it an interesting event.
That's Ian Shepherdson of Pantheon Macroeconomics. Before world markets went on a roller coaster ride, Wall Street had been expecting a September rate hike. Now Shepherdson says investors will be listening for subtle clues.
Changes of view tell you where the Fed might be thinking about an inflection point in terms of its overall thinking. So if a hawk becomes dovish or a dove becomes hawkish, that really matters.
There's now debate on Wall Street on the likelihood of a rate hike in September versus as late as December. Patrick Newport at IHS says what we do know is that Yellen wants a rate hike this year.
I think the key will be to look to see what happens in the next 4 employment reports.
He says those reports are likely to show a resilient U.S. economy, which means any delay in a rate hike will be a short one. I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
Authorities in China are pursuing criminal investigations following the massive chemical blasts that rocked a Chinese port earlier this month. Authorities are scrutinizing 23 people said to have links to the disaster in Tajin, including 12 now detained by police. 139 people were killed when a warehouse caught fire and exploded, destroying a large area of the city and paralyzing a crucial port. The BBC's Celia Hatton has more from Beijing.
Five executives from Reihai Logistics, the company that operated the warehouse at the center of the Tianjin blasts, have been detained, including the company's chairman, vice chairman, and 3 deputy general managers. 7 others who haven't been named are also under police detention. The owners of the logistics company are thought to have used personal connections to illegally obtain licenses, allowing them to store hazardous chemicals too close to a residential area. The Chinese state media reported earlier that Reihai Logistics operated for more than a year without any of the necessary permits. 11 government officials are also suspected of a variety of crimes that led to the blasts, from the dereliction of duty by failing to carry out safety inspections to the abuse of power involved in illegally granting business licenses.
Celia Hatton with the BBC. 10 years after Katrina and the flood, New Orleans faces daunting challenges, including intolerable levels of violence. But there are also signs of vitality, from its irrepressible arts and restaurant scenes to its independent businesses that gave the city resilience in the face of disaster and continue to contribute to its flair. Why does New Orleans have so many shopping districts that don't look like the classic American landscape of Best Buy meets Staples meets JCPenney? Well, Roberta Brandes Gratz is an urban planner whose new book is called We're Still Here, You Bastards, How the People of New Orleans Rebuilt Their City. One part of this book takes a look at a somewhat pedestrian reason, pun intended, for New Orleans' commercial character. It's about a light touch when it comes to planning for parking.
The thing about parking in New Orleans is there's on-street parking everywhere. You have people coming in and out of parking spaces, parking on both sides, often in 2 directions. And in this case, what's so interesting is that you have more turnover of business than you might have in a big mall where you're going to park and sit for hours. Here, you're on a mission. You have an errand. You're going to park. You're going to take care of it. And then you're going to leave.
Do you think that in some other city, the urban planning experts would roll their eyes and go, no way. We want real parking lots, not right there.
I like to say that the transportation engineers somehow missed New Orleans. Thank God. Now they should go back and study it to understand not only what they did wrong, but what they can put back to make work. And it's happening, you know, in other cities all around the country. We have something called traffic calming,
That's when you put in features to slow the traffic down or maybe even dissuade some cars from coming in certain directions.
Exactly. And in this case, New Orleans has the original form of it.
Now, I want to sit for a moment on a statistic that you offer in the book. Local businesses, the custom ones, the ones very associated with New Orleans, you think that they have four times the economic impact over perhaps a chain store?
There was a study that you're referring to compared a Target to a number of local stores. Target, and I don't mean to single out Target. I happen to like Target. The parking required. When you think of all the parking, the blacktop, that is taking up land that could otherwise be filled by income-producing properties.
Just briefly before we go, Roberta, tell me about the title of your book. It's got the B word in it. What's this a reference to?
This was a real graffiti after Katrina, and a friend of mine took a picture of it. So when I started writing the book and I had sort of done the introduction and I quoted all these graffitis, my editor said, "That's it. We're still here, you bastards. That's the title." It was a real graffiti.
All right. The subtitle of the book is How the People of New Orleans Rebuilt Their City. Roberta Brandes-Gratz is a noted urbanist who's also written, among other things, about the shaping of New York's urban landscape. Ms. Gratz, thank you.
Thank you.
Graffiti, graffito. To hear more of my reporting from New Orleans, go to marketplace.org and put in the words Katrina and Indy, I-N-D-I-E, in the search box. From Montclair State University today in New Jersey, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.